We've asked all our main speakers to participate this morning in the Ask It Basket session. We've given each of them a few of your questions to answer. We'll answer as many questions as we have time for this morning. We'll start on this end. And each speaker will come up to the mic and answer questions. So I'll start with the big cheese.
There you go.
That's you, Clancy.
Well, as you know, my name is Clancy. I'm an alcoholic. And one of my, they gave me the questions. I have one that I have a great answer for. She says, Clancy, how many would you estimate you have sponsored? And the answer is one too few. The same answers for every question. How long does one have to be sober to become someone's sponsor? Well, Bill Wilson became Dr. Bob's sponsor when he was, what, 6 months sober, 5 months sober? I think you just have to be ahead of him in the book. And I don't think there's any time element. I've seen some new people who become lively sponsors, and yet other people who should have become sponsors never did. So I don't think there's any way to do that, except it should. If someone has confidence in you and believes what you tell them, then you're old enough to be a sponsor. And if not, wait a while. That's all. And my next question is, if you are new, how long should it take to go through the steps for the first time? I went through the first three steps and didn't even know I was going through them. I don't think there's any time element, except I should be up to your sponsor. I think I'm a very strong believer in sponsorship. I think sponsorship is the ultimate help in AA. And I don't think you can ask me that question and I can give you an answer. I think you have to ask your sponsor, how long should I take to go through the steps? And he will or she will have an answer for you, I'm sure. That's all I have to say. That's all my questions. I noticed one more question here. When are you going to get better? I don't know.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Paul C.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. Why is rotation of service important? Well, you know, it's very easy to get ossified in our AA groups, in our service structures. So we always need new blood, new ideas, new energy, new enthusiasm. It never ceases to bring a tear to my eyes when I think about Bill Wilson stepping down in 1955 in St. Louis after he had poured 20 years of blood, sweat, and tears into our service structure and into this wonderful life-saving, life-giving fellowship. As he's about to turn Alcoholics Anonymous over to the groups via its general service conference, he didn't say, look at this cool thing I'm giving to you. He didn't say, aren't you glad I'm doing this? What he said was, Alcoholics Anonymous was at last safe, even from me. And if Bill Wilson can say that, I think the rest of us can say, and I think we have to ask ourselves, is the General Service Board safe, even from me? Are the AA World Service and Grapevine Boards safe, even from me? Are the Grapevine Office and the General Service Office safe, even from me? Is the General Service Conference safe, even from me? Are the area assemblies and the intergroups and the central offices and the districts safe, even from me? Is my home group safe, even from me? Are the people I sponsor safe, even from me? If we can say yes, then we have been blessed with being inducted into AA the way it was designed. If we can't say yes, we have more work to do. So that's the first question. Why is rotation of service important? The second one here, I can barely read. But we had a six-month member in our open group who had some outside issues. In the middle of a meeting, she began using a cell phone to record and voice and film during the meeting. She was asked to stop and destroy the recordings. She refused, but finally left and posted all of it on Facebook. At our next business meeting, it was motioned, discussed, and voted to ban her from our home group for life. In typical AA overreaction. There are other groups, and it says, I am uncomfortable about this. Please advise. Well, you know, Leo Tolstoy, who is not somebody I would put right up there with AA, had a wonderful quote. He said, everybody wants to change the world. Nobody wants to change himself. I think we can identify that with that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and this outside issue thing is going to continue. It's gone on for a long time. It will continue to go on in AA. But, I mean, what we would have done, our group would have done, they would have taken her outside and broke her legs. No. I'm sorry. I was thinking of another group. We would have talked to her sponsor. We would have corralled her after the meeting. We would have given her a firm talking to and told her to knock it off. And if it happened again, because this is disruptive, they probably would have escorted her out of the AA meeting. And I don't know that we would ban her for life, but we would have been very clear that it's not a cool thing to do in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Okay, next. Paul, what is the responsibility of the individual group and AA as a whole to prevent 13th stepping and other predatory, especially sexually predatory behavior? You know, I would wish they would have given this to a woman. But I think we have a responsibility to provide safe meeting places in AA. And, you know, for about 40 years, our membership was stuck at between 30 and 35% women. This last survey, there was a slight uptick to about 38%. That means they're outnumbered about 2-1. They have low self-esteem often. They are vulnerable. And like I tell my guys, I say, look, these are our sisters in suffering, and they can be our sisters in sobriety. Treat them with respect. You don't have to go hunting for romantic relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor told me looking for romance in AA is like looking for a business partner in bankruptcy court. So, and he knew whereof he spoke. But I think, you know, I mean, I think the office was very reluctant to delve into this particularly thorny issue. But it has made some movements. There are some grapevine articles about this. There's now a safety card for what that's worth. There is a discussion about safety in AA, some guidelines, but they buried it on the website. Good luck finding it. And I think we have a responsibility to call each other on our behaviors. I know, you know, friends of mine who were young women when they sobered up 50-plus years ago, the women would circle around them. After the meeting, the guy would approach and get lost. You got nothing to say to this woman. We got her. We're good. And I don't know that that happens as much anymore. But I do think that the fellowship has a whole. I think responsible men have an obligation to protect all of us and keep all of us safe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could go on and on, but I already have.
My name's Carrie, and I'm an alcoholic. Always have been and probably always will be. So I don't know how Clancy got away with three questions and I got six, but I'll try to keep these as brief as possible. Some of these are not going to be easy. So I live in a rural area, net a large AA population. I am seeing infrequency and increasingly disturbing reluctance, I think it says, to be of service by people any experience should work, I think it says, or would be welcome. Okay. This one was my hardest one to read. Billy actually had to help me with deciphering the handwriting last night. I think I got it. So I actually, you know, it's a rule of mine that I don't offer my opinion in Alcoholics Anonymous. I also don't try to interpret the literature. It's in black and white. If I have experience on something, I can share my experience. If I know where it is in the literature, I can refer you there. But I don't have experience in a rural area. You know, well, I do. But we're pretty active in the service structure. So I can tell you right now, actually as we speak this weekend, in I live in Oregon, Area 58, District 5. There's a place, I don't know, I think it's a couple hours from where I live, called John Day, Oregon. And there was no, I think there was like two meetings, don't quote me on that, whatever. But a woman moved in from California, and she realized there's no GSRs, there's no connection to central office, no connection to anything. And she reached out to our DCM, and it's 2 hours away from our little community. This weekend they did an AA Day of Sharing in John Day. And because she reached out to this gentleman, our DCM, he kind of really band together, and we really announced it in meetings, and there was flyers, and there was this AA Day of Sharing. They're flying in speakers, and they're talking about PI and CPC and getting involved in general service and all this good stuff for this little town. And a lot of the surrounding areas have been able to participate in this. And I think it's just about pulling together and asking for support sometimes. So again, I don't personally have experience with that. Another thing that I want to emphasize, that I think I heard at my table today, the term attraction rather than promotion. And we take that out of context sometimes. And my service structure, or my service sponsor, has actually helped me to understand that there is nothing against promotion in AA. That term comes from our public relation policy, which is how we relate to the public, but it only is about my personal anonymity. So we do CPC and we do PI stuff and we do commercials, and but as long as my face isn't on that, as far as the outside goes. Now, as far as the inside goes, my face or my name, we do want people to know where we are and who we are. As far as the inside of AA goes, we make announcements. We promote the hell out of events like this. I mean, come on, you know? If you need help in your area, reach out to your DCM. Reach out to your delegate. And you can promote, you know? And one of the things that have helped me promote within AA, does anybody have a service manual on them? Can I please? Thank you. This might be frothy emotional appeal, but it really helps. It is probably the most frothy thing in the service manual, but I can't usually get through it without crying. And this usually will pull on the heartstrings of anybody who doesn't know what service is about or why you would want to be involved in it. General service conference. Oh, we may not need a general service conference to ensure our own recovery. Yeah, we're sober, right? We do need it to ensure the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles in the darkness one short block from this room. We need it to ensure the recovery of a child being born tonight destined for alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with our 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who in the ages ahead can find that in AA, that rebirth that brought us all back to life. We need it because more than all others are conscious of the devastating effects of the human urge for power and prestige, which we must ensure can never evade AA. We need it to ensure AA against government while insulating it against anarchy. I'm going to skip down a little bit. This is beautiful. It's on page S20 in the service manual. We need it to ensure that changes within AA come only as a response to the needs and wants of all AA and not any few. We need it to ensure that the doors and the halls of AA never have locks on them, so that all people for all time who have an alcoholic problem may enter these halls unasked and feel welcome. We need it to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous never asks of anyone who needs us what his or her race is, what his or her creed is, what his or her social position is. And I encourage anybody to print that page out if you don't have people willing to get involved in service and offer them a little bit of frothy emotional appeal. Sometimes it suffices. So that's my answer for that one. I have the next question I have. It was actually directed at me. It has my name on it. It says, where in our AA literature can I find the definition of an open meeting? I love that it's asking where in our AA literature, not what my definition of an open meeting is. So I'm going to turn to page 13 of the wonderful AA group pamphlet, and I'm going to say open meetings are available to anyone interested in Alcoholics Program of Recovery from Alcoholism. Non-alcoholics may attend open meetings as observers. I'm also going to refer to R 12 and 12, where it talks about the first open meeting, when they started opening meetings after Al-Anon family groups was already, in place, and they didn't really have a reason for open meetings anymore because the Al-Anons had their own place to go. But here's another reason. So they found many groups began to hold, this is on page 186 of the 12 and 12, many groups began to hold meetings which were open to the interested friends and to the public so that the average citizen could see for himself just what AA was all about. So that the medical, the professionals, people from other 12-step fellowships or who want to start other 12-step fellowships can come and learn what we are and what we are not. And so I take a great responsibility in an open meeting to actually not talk about as many outside issues as I might in a closed meeting, to actually not use the F word, to actually present Alcoholics Anonymous for what it is and what it is not, because we're open to the public, and this is where they come to learn. The next question that I have is, what is a service sponsor? Okay. Okay. I'm all lost here. So a service sponsor. I'm going to read that directly out of the questions and answers on sponsorship pamphlet. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's a few pages. But my favorite part in what is a service sponsor is a service sponsor is usually someone who is knowledgeable in AA history, has a strong background in the service structure. The AA member is introduced to new language, GSR, DCM, Area Assembly, Minority Opinion. They will become familiar with the traditions before the concepts. They and warranties, as well as the AA service manual, which Laura just let me borrow, concepts for world services, Alcoholics Anonymous comes of age, and other AA literature. So my personal experience with a service sponsor is I have the best sponsor, I'm sorry, in the entire history of the world, okay? She has like 200 years of sobriety, and she is the most amazing. She lives and breathes these steps, and she knows me better than anyone else in the world, and I would never want another sponsor, okay? However, in all of her decades of sobriety, she's never even been a GSR, right? So how is she going to show me the stuff that I need to know when I want to go into service? So my service sponsor helps me with the stuff that, like, she doesn't know about the concepts, and actually, after years of working with her, it's kind of flipped, and I've been able to freely give back to her what she has so freely given to me, because I'm kind of her service sponsor today. And when she has tradition questions or concepts questions, she knows where to come, and that feels really good. But one of the reasons that I service sponsor so many people is because of this legacy skipping thing that Billy mentioned. People who are on fire for the steps jump into service. They go spread whatever they think AA is, and then it's really difficult for us three legacy servants who have actually been through the traditions to go around and clean up after them. So what I do is I take people through the traditions. You know, I guess you could call me a second legacy sponsor or whatever before we set them loose in service. And I do that with, I've taken hundreds of people through the traditions and email me. I can even do it on the email. So that's what service sponsorship, I think, is different for everyone. I think the main thing is if you have a service position that you've never held before, the best service sponsor you can get is a committee workbook. We have them. We have them for a reason. They're wonderful. But someone else who has served in that position, and that might not be your sponsor. So, and then what were the three? I can't find the question now, but there was a question asking me what. Oh, here it is. What are the three pamphlets called again that were recommended and highlighted? You ran out. Yes, I did. And those the three pamphlets is number one, most important pamphlet in all of AA, the AA group. Any question you have about your meeting or your group or whatever can be answered in this. It's amazing. Pamphlet P16. Problems other than alcohol, which has always looked like this, but then people complained and they said, well, Bill Wilson wrote that in 1958 and it might not be relevant today and times are changing and addicts and blah. And some frothy emotional appeal happened and it forced us to re-conference approve the pamphlet, and now it looks like this, and it has a little bullet point at the bottom that pretty much, it is the only thing that is different about the pamphlet, is it says that although, you know, some of the language might be outdated, these issues addressed are very relevant today. And then there's a mini one of those, which I think is great for the non-readers such as myself. I couldn't read when I got into AA. And I think, and then here's the last one. So this is, I live in an area where there are no AA groups, just meetings or fellowships. I don't know what a fellowship is. We have groups and meetings where I live, but this is the fellowship. So that's going to be a difficult question for me. A few of us got together and started a group, but it fell apart after a year. I claim a meeting as my group now, but that's not the same. Is there any advice? Well, number one, become a GSR. I was taught that this is not a program of acceptance. I love the back of the book, but it's not where I recover. I recover from the program of action, like Billy was talking about. And so if I want something to change, I don't just get to sit back and accept it in AA. I get into action, right? So become a GSR, number one suggestion. That's what I did. Start attending your area assembly. Begin inviting people to your monthly district meetings, your area assemblies. Start inviting people to a monthly business meeting to hear your report, even if nobody shows up. You can sit there in the meeting, after the meeting, by yourself and give a report. So action, not acceptance, is the answer to that question. Thank you for letting me answer your questions.
Good morning, everyone. Again, I'm Nancy McCarthy. I'm a Class A trustee. And first, I would like to thank Laura. Friday night, after I showed you how my husband had wanted to fix my brother's big book, Laura came up to me and had offered to do that for me. And so she founded it and fixed it. And so I will treasure this, and it will remain intact for years to come. So thank you, Laura. So I have three questions. How did you decide to become a trustee? I did not make the initial decision on whether or not I would be a good trustee or not. What is called upon is for the fellowship to identify who they believe can be a good trustee. And I know whenever there's Class A positions that are open, there's announcements that go out in newsletters and magazines and what have you. But it was within my area. And when my brother got active in service work, he introduced me to members of the fellowship within the St. Louis area, within Area 38. And they were the ones who worked with me, who taught me, who suggested to me that, you know, you may want to look at this, you may want to consider this. And so that's who helped decide that I could become and could interview to be a trustee. So that's how you decide that. It's the fellowship, I believe, that decides that. What is the most valuable lesson you have learned in AA? When I served as a regional administrator before I was selected for the board, I managed a probation and parole area in the St. Louis metro area, and I had about 525 staff and about 20,000 clients that we were responsible for. And so when you make decisions and when you're in that type of position, you certainly seek input from others, but then the decision is yours, and you have to act on it, and sometimes you have to act quickly, and you don't always have the ability to solicit opinions. The most valuable lesson I've learned in AA is what I saw in action, and that was the minority voice. And I saw that in the action on the board. And there was times when a question would be asked and a resolution and an answer would be given, and then the minority voice was heard. And there was a couple times in just that first year that I saw a change in the decision and change in the belief in terms of how we should proceed. But what I really saw it in action was in the conference. And what I saw it in action is the passion and the heartfelt decisions and the heartfelt explanation from the delegates in terms of why they felt the way they felt and why they voted the way they did. And again, to me, that was a way that I thought, if I could go back into my previous career, that would have been a way to run an organization, is to make sure that that minority voice is heard. Because when people feel heard, they feel a part of. And that was very important. What calls a non-alcoholic to serve as a level A trustee, as a Class A trustee? My brother. That was the most perfect example. If it was not for AA, Michael would have been dead or he would have been in jail. And that extends beyond family members. It extends to the people that I worked with, extends to the staff that worked for us, and more importantly and equally important to the clients that we worked with day in and day out. As you all know, those who work in the H&I world, probably 90%, 98% of the clients we work with have issues with drinking, with alcohol. And for some of them to have perhaps heard the message, to perhaps have been into the rooms of AA prior to going to prison, maybe they wouldn't have been there. And so that's why we as Class A step forth to work with you and to serve you. And so thank you.
My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I've kind of a, this is I'm not sure what to do with this. If you could give one piece of advice to someone going into their seventh year of sobriety, what would it be? I don't know that my advice to somebody going into their seventh year would be any different than somebody there for their first day. Go to meetings, get a sponsor, be of service. Dr. Bob said, clean house, stay sober, clean house, and help others. I don't know what any different advice. I don't do much different. My prayer life even is pretty much the same as it was when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I just read some different books. So I do today pretty much like what I've always done all the time I've been sober. And how can we encourage more old-timers, specifically women, to get back into sponsoring? The East Bay is starving for strong women sponsors. I don't know. I see a lot of women in this room. I think this is the East Bay that I know that are amazing women. And Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know about all of the East Bay, but if somebody wasn't attending a lot of meetings and doing this program, I wouldn't want them for a sponsor anyway. I feel like, in fact, at the length of sobriety I have, I've just got this feeling as that the longer I'm sober, the more I need to go to meetings, the more I need to be involved. Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I have a progressive illness. If I have a progressive illness, I am more alcoholic at 41 years of sobriety than I was when I came here. And my disease is progressing every single day. And I've been sober long enough to see a lot of people with a lot of sobriety go out. And it's a tragic, tragic thing. So I need meetings. I need to be doing the deal every single day like I did when I first got here. And I still do AA the same way. I go to a lot of meetings. I sponsor a lot of people. And I pray every day, every morning, and every night. So if they're not going to meetings, I wouldn't want them for a sponsor anyway. How do you balance working a program, both AA and Al-Anon? Do you have two sponsors? I'll answer the last question first. Yes, I have two sponsors. I have an Al-Anon sponsor, and I have an AA sponsor. How do I balance AA and Al-Anon? I always know what my primary problem is and what my primary purpose is. My primary problem is alcoholism. My primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. Al-Anon has helped me in many areas of my life, especially with my children. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not sure I'd be sober today if it were not for Al-Anon, because I was early in sobriety. I was 5 years, and one of my children was killing themselves with alcohol and drugs, and my other son was trying to kill himself by hurting himself and stabbing himself and a lot of different things. And I simply did not have the ability. I was in so much pain because of what was going on with my sons. And what happened for me was that there was a woman in AA one night when I went to a meeting, and I was coming apart. I was absolutely coming apart because both of my sons were killing themselves. And I just was in so much pain, I didn't know if I could stay sober. I hurt so bad. And this lady walked up to me, and she was a double winner. And she says, I need to take you to an Al-Anon meeting. And I'm so grateful that she took me to an Al-Anon meeting, because what happened was, is that at that meeting that night when I was sitting there, and I know that this is well-meaning person, this man said to me, you just need to turn those boys over. And I just said, would you kindly tell me how to do that? And he didn't know either. And what happened was, is this lady took me to an Al-Anon meeting, and these women gathered around me, and they said, Of course you feel the way you feel. You're a mother. And they said, what we're going to show you how to do is how to love your kids without it killing you. And that's what was able to be was shown to me. They helped me love my sons without it killing me. And by God's grace, I believe it saved my sobriety. Thank you.
Billy Alcoholic. Let's see. Can an AA birthday be taken? Oh, wow. Can an AA birthday be taken away if you smoke pot or pain meds? I have never seen an AA birthday taken away. I hear it. Can you celebrate if you take smoking pot or taking pain meds? It doesn't classify the pain meds between prescribed and not prescribed. But it wouldn't matter to me. Because I would go to Paul's, it's either my business or none of my business, and this is clearly none of my business. Now, if someone that I'm close to would ask me what to do, I would have a conversation for them to tell them to put it, you know, make their own best decision, and I would give them some input for sure. But I've yet to be to an AA birthday meeting where they call up Jane or Johnny from the back of the room with the big cake waiting and pull out the checklist. Oh, hold on. 2 speeding tickets. Didn't report some income last year. Behind on child support. I've never seen the checklist. It's simply you have said that you have another year sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you celebrate. Now, have I seen people or know of situations where people celebrate and shouldn't have, and that wears on them, and hopefully they disclose it to someone before that secret kills them? Yes, I've seen that. Oh, that's going to last. As a trusted servant, I've been criticized for how I've done my service and how I interpret some traditions. How have you dealt with criticism from inside this fellowship, especially when accused of not caring about AA and the suffering alcoholic? How can I offer criticism when I feel it is necessary and responsible and be kind and effective? So, a couple of things I would say about that. One, the day, the Monday or Tuesday, it must have been a Tuesday, because when I went from after that meeting that I was interviewed, it was about a month later, there was a General Service Board meeting. And at that General Service Board meeting, AAWS reported that I was selected as the new non-trustee director. The next day, that Tuesday, when word had gotten out, I received a call from my friend Arnold Ross. And Arnold is a past General Service trustee and past non-trustee director. And he said, welcome to the club. He said, you have just been promoted from the critic to the criticized. And that was a well intended, because I was a critic, no doubt about it. And I just got put into the other camp, become part of the criticized. You are going to be criticized. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what job you have in AA. It doesn't matter if you're the new cookie person. It doesn't matter. You might have decided Nutter Butters instead of Oreos, right? You just may have. You might have decided to offer tea, God forbid, right? There, you might have decided to be the first person to introduce PowerPoint, do a presentation. There are so many things. And the one thing I think, the best advice I have for this, there used to be a speaker I used to run into a lot named Reverend Ed M. And he used to talk about having a bag of ones. So the next time you are at a taper's table, ask them if they have a Reverend Ed tape. And what I used to like about it is he said, alcoholics collect ones. That we can be in a room with 400 people and 399 of them are happy with us. But we don't care about the 399 who are happy with us. We are focused on the one person who is not happy with us. And we carry with that with us every day, every minute. And so my advice is, if you're, first of all, AA service has given me so much in my non-AA life. Learned so many things here. But I would tell you what it has learned, helped me learn the most is, you will always be criticized. It does not matter what side you're on. It does not matter what position you take. It does not matter whether it's your idea, someone else's idea. There is the greatest and the worst thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. The greatest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is our membership. And the worst thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is our membership. It's very simple. It's a very easy equation. You will always be criticized. You can't let that. And I would point out in the service manual, the other thing, you can't let your ego convince you that your critics are always wrong. You have to be willing to be able to say to yourself, wow, I might be wrong. The service manual is very clear that a good idea may come from anywhere. Might come from a new GSR. Might come from a new alternate GSR. It will come from anywhere. But that's the acid test that the service manual talks about. Is, can you accept criticism? And can you decide which is maybe personality driven or, but if there's something out there that's valid, we want to be the best at what we do. As far as how can I offer criticism when I feel it necessary and be responsible and be kind and effective, I would tell you what I said during my last talk. It is not, you know, listen, because of the corporate world that I work in, I've learned so much. So AA's taught me a lot. My work's taught me a lot. You know, but communication is not only verbal. In fact, the experts say that 80% of communication is nonverbal or more. So what I mean by that is you have to act better than you want to. That means when you're at a business meeting or an assembly or a district, that means there's no rolling of the eyes. It's hard. This guy for the 100th time is going to come up with the same ridiculous idea. But guess what? That's his right. I don't get to roll my eyes. I don't get to text three other people in the meeting, what is this fool talking about? Right? I do not get to do that. I do not. And when I go to the microphone, it's how you deliver it, not what you deliver. It is not what you deliver. You're entitled to what you deliver. But how you do it and how often you do it, well, that's how the audience you're delivering that to will decide if they'll even. My experience is, the people in AA that throw a bomb in the middle of the room, that come armed with 5 Molotov cocktails to every AA business meeting or assembly or district they come to, and they like when it's perfectly serene to light that baby up and throw it in the middle of the room. My experience is, that's your right, but what you are doing is you are telling the rest of the AA population to never listen to anything you have to say. Because they're not going to listen to you. If that's the only way you operate, then I tune you out from the minute you go to that microphone. I'm just not going to listen. So it is the manner and the method and not the message that you are communicating. I was at an assembly, taught me a big lesson. When I lived in New Jersey, there were two past trustees, John and John. I mean, these guys are so best friends, it's hard to even describe. The one John who's still alive owns the burial plot next to the other John who passed away. But the other John who passed away taught me a huge lesson one day. I was an appointed committee member on corrections, but I had just moved to Jersey, and a woman had been elected to be the DCM workshop chair. And she got up to give a report at the assembly when it was her turn, and a past delegate, and I'm a person, I don't like past delegate tables, I don't like past delegate sections, I don't like daises where all officers sit up at the front of the room. I like podiums like this. I like people being equals. And I don't like little, like, political action committees tables that sit. And this is like everybody's going to look to see how they feel about something. I think it's very un-AA. I don't care what area does it. Lots of areas do. I think it's completely un-AA. I don't like past delegates who want to walk up and down as people are talking so that the person is focused. Is that person against me? Are they with me? But anyway, a past delegate came up to the microphone after this woman's report and basically brought her to tears. And I have to think, have I ever done something that stupid? Probably yes. You know? Have I got to the microphone and been such a sniper that it became less about the issue and the person felt I was more coming after them? Yes. And I saw this woman, and when you see someone who's super enthusiastic about service and that air is taken out of her balloon, it hurts. It hurts her. It hurt me. I'll never forget this one John. You would never know he was ever a trustee. I mean, on his trustee resume, it said that he was drove a truck for the phone company and owned an Irish bar. I swear to God, that's what his resume said. If you ran into him, you would never know that he was a trustee. Even up to before he died, I would go into the clubhouse on the Jersey Shore right across from the ocean or the beach, and he would be there welcoming newcomers. He would never tell anyone he was a trustee. He would tell you the only thing he knew about a trustee is he was surprised more than anyone else that he ever became a trustee. That's what he would tell me. But that any and I never ever saw him go to a microphone at an assembly, ever. But that day he did. And I remember when he went up to that microphone. And I remember when he said, "Young lady, I want to thank you for all the work you've done. And I want to really thank you for all these new ideas and suggestions that you have. And I don't know about anyone else, but I can't wait to come back to the next assembly and hear your next report. The manner in which you deliver is what it's all about." Can I have your AA group pamphlet? What does AA literature say about drug addiction?
Page 18.
I know, but thank you. Like I said, the manner in which you deliver, right? Now, what's funny is not only did she tell me the page number, but she has highlighted for me, right? She has this section highlighted already. It says here, the primary purpose of an AA group is to carry the AA message to alcoholics. Experience with alcohol is one thing all AA members have in common. It is misleading to hint or give the impression that AA solves other problems or knows what to do about drug addiction. So it's very clear there to me. Let's see. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So these are two great grapevines. Sometimes I get accused of saying stuff about the grapevine that's not positive. That's true. I have my concerns sometimes at what they print. I think it should be the widest view of AA possible. But if someone writes something where they're promoting other people go against our group conscience, I don't think it belongs in there. When you write a letter and say our group decided that the third tradition is optional, we let non-alcoholics belong to our group and let them hold service positions, that is not sending a good message to the newcomer who reads the grapevine. That is sending a horrible message, and we don't need to print it. And it's amazing because I was recently with the grapevine editor who said, Billy, we need you to write an article. I said, well, when are you going to print my last two? I wrote an article called Business is Not a Bad Word in AA. Business should be truthful, accountable, responsible, and transparent. For some reason, that one won't get published. But if you write an article that you let non-alcoholics belong to your group and hold service positions, that gets published. But these two are amazing. This is the one for Bill. This is the one for Bob, about both their lives and a lot of stories about them in AA. And I would tell you that, to me, it's some of the best reading in AA. One of my biggest concerns is the activity of the so-called anti-AA activists. Among their accusations, they cite traditions 4 and 10 of an example of an institutional disregard for the well-being of individual members. How can we rank and file AA members ensure the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law is followed? So there's the traditions. Each group's autonomous. And there's the other one about having no outside opinions. Let's just talk about that for a second. Number one, read all you want about the fourth tradition. It is, and specifically, read the Traditions Illustrated. It is about customs with a C, not traditions with a T. The fourth tradition is not a veto power for any group, district, area, inner group, central office, AAWS, Grapevine Board, General Service Board, to break another tradition. I will tell you, 90% of the time that I hear the fourth tradition brought into a business meeting, I am getting ready for another one of the 11 to be broken any second. And it was not created for that. It was created for customs. Your group likes speakers to dress up. That's nice. Not a tradition. Your group likes to open the building an hour early with tables in the back so that sponsors can work with their sponsees. Very nice. Not a tradition. Your group likes to let the newest person celebrating a year sober pick the speaker for the anniversary meeting. Again, really nice, but not a tradition. You don't get to use the fourth tradition as a veto power for the other 11. Was never created that way. As far as outside issues, yes. I'm not gonna tell you there is not an anti-AA movement, because there is. I'm also not gonna tell you the leaders of that movement, most of them are in the stigma army, I call it. They believe that we are antiquated and outdated with our anonymity, and that if we would all go public, we would do a gift for the world and show that we can all recover. That might be good if you're a heavy drinker, but if you have the spiritual malady that we have of alcoholism, I do not believe that I can be famous for being sober. I can't live up to that as a real alcoholic. I can't live up to that. But there is an army out there of people, including past trustees and delegates, who are inside that army, who are out there telling people, about the stigma, and we stay away from that. Let's face it, it's 2018. Anything that is free is not going to be popular with people who like to make money. I said the other day, AA used to be aftercare. I'm not anti-treatment or anti-detox or anti-counselor. I just want AA to be AA and stay out of the treatment business, and I want treatment to be treatment. But now people are being told, oh no, you need aftercare and you need this, and maybe some do. But when there's a financial motive involved, we don't have a financial motive. So I try to not be concerned about the anti-AA activists, but I don't try to deny it. I know they're out there. I know they're all going to be pointing the finger at us. And we don't respond to their criticism, you know? As an organization, I can say what I want as a person, but as an organization, we keep doing what we're doing. It's unbelievable. Once you've served on the board and you go to enough board meetings and you hear the PI desk report, something happens 2 months ago, a reporter calls, do you have a comment? No, we don't give comments. 2 months later, something else happens in the news. The same reporter calls back, hey, you have a comment on that? No, we really don't give comments. I mean, it is unbelievable, but that is what has kept us on the straight and narrow. The minute we start debating, and I think that's good advice in your professional and personal life, stop the debate. The more you feed into it, it just goes out of control. I think what bothers people about us the most is that we don't respond. It's like somebody is finally trying to find the secret sauce recipe of how do I get under AA's skin enough for them to respond. And our position until then has been, until now has been, we're not going to respond. How can the secular call themselves AA? Are they supported by the real AA, GSO? Well, I want to say something. I don't think there is a real AA. I think the most important thing on that shade when it comes to Tradition 9, my good friend John Kay, who served with Paul, wrote a whole... He's a great writer, much better than I'll ever be. That comma in Tradition 9 is super important. AA, comma, as such, shall never be organized. Until last April, I was a trustee, chair of AWS, on the audit committee, the compensation committee, the nominating committee, the AA Grapevine, AAWS cooperation committee. That sounds very organized to me. I don't know about you. That sounds very organized. But that's because it's after the comma. AA before the comma is the spiritual entity. And AA as such is not organized. So when you say the real AA, I don't believe there is the real AA. The General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous is our structure that many of our groups belong to. Now, how can the secular call themselves AA? This is a problem that I pointed out many years ago, and I now will be talking about it forever. I served as the chair of the Advisory Council for the International Conference of Young People in AA. I am proud of that service. I love my time in young people's conferences. But I have been against this term YPA forever. This term Young People Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you talk to most people inside it, they will tell you it stands for Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. That in is crucial. And I will be fighting now for the next couple of years to get every young people's conference who uses the term YPA to add an I, a small I, in between YP and AA. Almost like another company that uses a small I very effectively. But I'm going to get WIPA to do it as much as I can, because it's young people in Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you just go by the letters, it's Young People Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no such thing as Young People Alcoholics Anonymous. Am I very concerned that on this website it is not Secular in Alcoholics Anonymous? It is called Secular Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is definitely different than the organization I belong to. It is definitely not the Alcoholics Anonymous that I am a member of. And what kills me about this, to be perfectly honest, is I have been tarred, feathered, drawn and quartered, hung from a window about how liberal I am when it comes to my support of atheists and agnostics. Because I was an atheist for a good many years until that changed. And if I had to believe in God my first day in AA, I would have never stayed in AA. And so it infuriates me, because I support anyone to go to an atheist and agnostic meeting. I do not believe that you have to be transformed to be successfully sober. In fact, some of the most spiritual people I know in AA are atheists. In fact, the definition we use in AA for atheist and agnostic doesn't even match the outside worlds. But to create an organization called Secular Alcoholics Anonymous that does not have the word "in" used, secular AA members in Alcoholics Anonymous, or maybe the International Conference of Secular Members of secular people in Alcoholics Anonymous, fine. Have a once-a-year conference. But to put a website up and now have all this other stuff out there of an organization simply called Secular Alcoholics Anonymous, that seems like a separate entity to me. And like I said, I'm not on the show True Blood. I'm not the sheriff. I can't come in and make a ruling. But I will talk to young people about making sure young people in Alcoholics Anonymous is stressed. And I will talk to any friends that I know that are involved in Secular Alcoholics Anonymous and ask them to clarify that it's secular people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that all they are is a once-a-year annual convention and not some kind of alternative service structure that might be on the horizon. And what are they supported by the real AAGSO? That's a good question. That's a question that I'm sure is going to have to be debated now. Because when they were just the International Conference of Free Thinkers, Humanists, Atheists, and Agnostics in Alcoholics Anonymous, the general manager of GSO went to one of their conferences, as did a past chair of the General Service Board, who is still an emeriti trustee, which means you go to board meetings. For me personally, the way that they are named now, if I was a current trustee, I would not go, because it sounds like it's something separate. And I would need to, I did notice in their minutes that they have posted that they have contributed to the General Service Office. But I think this is going to become a very big issue. And what I'm afraid about this is all the great men and women, atheist, agnostic members that we have, who are great members of AA, that they'll be put in this camp of this separate organization, and they're not. So that's it. Thanks.
Please help me thank our amazing speakers once again.